Senate Finance will come to order. Thursday, April 27, a little after 9. Senator Seacon has a bill up today, and Senator Hoffman, Senator Dyson, Senator Stedman, and myself, Senator Green, look forward to hearing from you, Senator Seacon, Senate BPSO Task Force, Senate Resolution 6. Would you share with us, please?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I flew in today just specifically to meet with you.
Thank you. We're happy you're here.
This resolution basically is intended to have a fact-finding and come up with some additional dialogue having to do with the village public safety system in the state of Alaska. A lot of the rural areas across the state, including some rural areas now that are located on the road system, depend on those village public safety officers for police protection, law enforcement at that level. As we looked at the Rural Justice Committee's report and we looked at some of the information that came in from some of the rural communities and some of the concerns, and as we traveled around the state even this last summer, we found that, you know, this is an area that we know that the department is working on, the commissioner is concerned with, that he is taking a look at different structures, and in my opinion, we as a Senate should put together a little task force to take a look at this system and find out exactly, or try to find out exactly, where our weaknesses are, why we aren't able to deliver with the system the way that we should be able to, and make some proposed solutions to the legislature in the next session. So we want to review the statutes and regulations that deal with that. We want to prepare and deliver to the state, to the Senate here next January, a report on the findings and recommendations, and try to concentrate, you know, shine the light on it in view of the Senate and a task force or the Senate to be able to make some suggested improvements to the system. So with that, Madam Chair, I'm more than happy to answer any questions that I have or any comments.
Are there any questions of the sponsor? Okay, I know we do have one person online to testify, Loretta Bullard of Quarick from NOAM, and I had a couple of questions. On the first page, lines 14-15, it says, may receive per diem and travel expenses authorized for boards and commissions under 39, et cetera, subject to available funding and approval by the task force chair. And I know that you've been particularly vague.
Per diem there, I mean by that, Madam Chair, they're meals and lodging only. No honorarium of any kind.
Okay, so it would be on reimbursement?
Yeah, it would be. Dollar for dollar reimbursement.
Do you think that says that clearly enough in this language?
Well, I'm more than willing to try to craft it however you want. However, if I was the chair and I'm going to ask to be, I'll make sure that that's what it is, and I think you know how sticky I can be on that.
I just wanted to be sure that we weren't setting ourselves up for someone to say, well, they didn't limit it to X number of dollars, therefore it could be the Cadillac version. Oh, excuse me.
Lincoln.
The Lincoln,
yeah.
Versus the.
I asked Tam Cook to draft that so that.
Did she think this was restricted?
Yeah, she thought that was reasonable, and it was at the discretion of the chair. And basically, it was not a per diem; it was just for meals and travel. So, if we're going to take them to a rural area, I want to be able to put them up in a safe manner, make sure they're fed, and that we get them back home.
Okay. Is that satisfactory to everyone on the committee? That's limiting enough. Okay, are there any other questions? Do you think this is in any way redundant or a redo of things that have gone on in the past, or do you think we're just at a new level where?
Madam Chair, I believe that we're at a new level where we have to make some solid recommendations and take some action. We've had a lot of conversation, but we've never converted it into action. And I do believe that the time has passed for that. We've had a real Commission. We've had them take a look at it, but there have been nothing that's come out in terms of confirming what the problem is, coming up with some solid solutions and getting something into action. And I think it's time for that, and hopefully we can come back with some good recommendations for legislation to approach it.
Okay, very good. Any other questions of the sponsor? Let me ask for Loretta Bullard from Quarry Kink in Nome. Are you online?
Yes, I am. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Loretta Bullard, and I'm president of Quarry, and we're one of six regional nonprofit corporations that contracts with the state to provide the Village Public Safety Officer Program. We have eight positions throughout the Bering Straits region. We have 16 communities. I'd like to encourage this committee to support Senate Resolution Number 6 and forward it with a recommendation to do pass to the Senate floor. I encourage the task force, once established, to travel to some of our rural areas, those communities with zip codes and those without, so that you can gain public input on how the VPSO program can be improved. This service is so desperately needed in the rural areas. And I do think that there is room for improvement to make the program function more effectively, get these positions filled so that rural residents have the law enforcement that they so desperately need. I wanted to say that the VPSO contractors, I think it was last spring, had contracted with Dittman and Associates to develop a public opinion survey and had them survey, I would say, about 400 or 500 households in rural Alaska, and we'd be happy to forward a copy of that and share that with the task force once established. It's very illuminating in terms of the rural perception of the VPSO program. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Loretta? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Bullard, if you could just tell us, what do you think we're going to go ahead and get out of this task force that hasn't come out before?
I think it'll give an opportunity for, you know, the legislature, the Senate committee to hear from rural Alaskans about the need of the program and, you know, take a look at the statutes and the regulations governing the program. I hope that the legislature, you know, pays attention to the wages that the VPSOs receive. The way the contracts are administered, there's a huge component, you know, that's not reflected in the state program that rural Alaskans provide in support of the program, because they think that's so much needed. But, you know, for example, in a number of our communities, folks are, you know, the city offices, you know, might have somebody on 2 hours a day. Some of them can't pay their utility bills. The holding cells are in dismal shape. You know, I know that Senator Stevens had made monies available to the state of Alaska to help fix up, provide equipment, and fix up some of these rural holding cells. You know, that money hasn't been spent, and I think that the legislature needs to be aware of some of these issues and help us work with the department to address these issues.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Loretta. Yes. Are there any other questions?
Actually, I do, Madam Chairman. And this is more at the sponsor. I noticed that there are three members of the Senate are going to be on there. Why is the House not included?
It's a Senate resolution. I'd be glad to have House members come along with us and work with us, but it was a Senate resolution, and so therefore it was intended to be confined to looking at it from the Senate side.
Okay, and certainly I applaud you for looking at this very important program for rural Alaska.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Any other questions? Any other comments? Any opposition to moving this out today? Senator Olson, would you like to make the motion to move this out of committee?
I'd be glad to, Madam Chairman. I move that we move out Senate Resolution 6 with accompanying fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Is there objection? There being no objection, Senate Resolution 6 moves from committee with individual recommendations. And the caveat that the per diem is not to include an unlimited amount of money. It's for meals and lodging only.
Absolutely, Madam Chairman. I appreciate that, and I'll give you my pledge to that effect.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Look at the
Senator Stedman.
Yes.
SB 291, Municipal Harbor Facility Grants.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Bert Stedman. I represent District A in the Senate here. Today before us, we've got a Senate Bill 291, and if I could just kind of recap it a little bit. Several years ago, well, actually, I think the motion was put in place probably up to 30 years ago with municipal harbors built mostly by and with state funds, with agreements for maintenance and operations between the state and the municipalities. And there was roughly an agreement where the state would take care of major maintenance and the municipalities would operate it, the harbors. Well, over time it didn't work very well, and the harbors got older and dilapidated, and there was rates charged around the state in the harbors that were unsustainable for any type of enterprise fund dealing with major maintenance and replacement reserves. So the state went forward with a bond obligation, generated some monies, and paid the municipalities to take over the harbors, and there set in motion a heated debate over the value of what they were getting and the condition of the asset, mainly the harbors. Many communities around the state took their harbors and felt that they were getting 50 cents, 40 cents, 30 cents on the dollar, and they were stuck with huge maintenance and replacement costs, and then set forth the process of increasing fees, rental fees, to come up over a period of time where they can handle the replacement reserves and maintenance. Well, that debate has gone on now for several years, and it's time it ends. And what this bill does, it puts forward a program that would be a 50% matching capital grant for coastal communities that want to upgrade or expand and build new harbors. And rather than under the old system where the state would just send them a check, more or less, or with no strings attached, the communities would have to meet stringent requirements to access this 50% match. They would have to have in place fee structures that would enable them to not only cover the maintenance and the ongoing operational costs, but replacement reserves. And they'd also not be able to come back to the pot twice. They would be capped at $5 million per harbor. And with the municipalities, under the maximum example of putting in $5 million, the municipalities putting in, or the state five and the municipalities five, that'd be a $10 million harbor. The latest one built here in Juneau was about a $5.5 million harbor total. So that would be a very large harbor. The concern here is that we didn't have communities that would suck up all the revenue. Now this concept has some permissive language where the legislature may appropriate proceeds from the marine fish tax and the marine fuel tax up to a total of $10 million a year, five out of each. And that would be an annual appropriation at the whim of the legislature to just be decided at this table. The concept here is to have an ongoing mechanism that would last, we're talking roughly around 10 years. And the pecking order of who would get access to the funds would be first the communities that have received their harbors on the transfer, and then new and expansion harbors. DOT would administer this. So there would be some stringent requirements, again, that would have to be met, and then DOT would rank them and decide how to allocate it in a fair and equitable manner. There's been a lot of discussion and debate on how to come to a solution and a compromise on this issue. The 50-50 capital match was put forward by the Municipal Harbors Masters Association last fall. and that turned into this bill. So there's been a lot of dialogue between DOT, the harbor masters, the communities, and the legislators that have been active in this area. With that, Madam Chair, that is, in a nutshell, what we have here is a compromise to try to settle the ongoing dispute in the harbors and to make sure that, that we have infrastructure built on the coast that is maintained. There is replacement reserves, and that there is rates set by the individual community to accomplish that. If the individual community does not want to increase their harbor rates, they can subsidize it through their general fund or through some other mechanism. But they would have to meet those requirements. All harbors, to my knowledge, that are in this arena, all are increasing their mortgage rates over the last couple in the next 4 or 5 years. So we have the municipal harbor users squealing about the higher rates, but that is something that quite frankly needed to be done. And each community will set their own rate accordingly.
Well, Senator Bundy.
Thank you. What is the current use of the fisheries business tax and the water craft fuel tax?
Goes into the general fund. Now, what we're trying to do, and that's why there's this permissive language, even if we could, I don't think we'd really want to do dedicated funds, because it would become a rather challenging thing for us to deal with here. But the raw fish tax goes back, half of it goes back to the communities, and the marine fuel tax ends up going back through the legislative process to their general funds. Again, this would be permissive language, but as we all know, when things go into the general fund, they become general fund assets. So it would be a general fund allocation, even though it may be viewed as by some people coming from one way or the other, but once it hits the general fund, it's commingled.
So it really is general fund money that would be supporting this, because that's where it ended up previous to this.
The tax goes into the raw fish tax is split between the municipalities and the state right now. We're trying to come up with some fair way that the harbor users would support the harbors and thereby be very sensitive to their physical condition. And it seems like when people have an equity position in something or paying for something, they're more inclined to take care of it. And that's geared more for the communities. Because what we don't want is new harbors built and no maintenance programs. And we got to break this cycle that's run for years where the state goes in and builds infrastructure, and then it just gets dilapidated over a decade or two, and the state has to come in and replace it. We should be building new infrastructure and moving the state forward, and not having to come back and replace stuff that we've already built. Yeah. And that's kind of a philosophical opinion that I'm sure not universally shared.
So currently, there's no, there could be a harbor transferred, you know, with agreement, and then 2 or 3 years later, that area comes back and says, well, it really wasn't up to this grade we really wanted, therefore we need $5 million more. And then it goes down 4 or 5 more years and said, oops, something happened and we need more state funds. The beauty of this is, it says once you've received state funds, which you've matched, you can't come back for another piece of money.
And if I could, Madam Chair, you can't use state monies for a match. Now, if you had marine fuel tax or something like that, I mean, or a fish tax coming into your general fund as a normal flow, you can't go to the state and get some other grant from some other mechanism and then say, well, that's my equity position. Mm-hmm. And then you get a 50% capital match, so you have a zero down. That circumvents the intent here. The intent is that you put actual equity down. And if the municipalities want to go out and do revenue bonds or GO bonds to deal with their half, or some other mechanism, that's up to them, or if they want to do a general fund draw, mm-hmm. or the Harbor Enterprise Fund, does it as a standalone. But clearly, the intent here is to use real equity in the 50% match. And I've heard some concerns coming from the municipalities on that. They like the zero down concept, but you know, we just need to get away from our old way of doing business.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the award process on page 3, section C, you list the five categories here that must be considered in order, but do you envision that the department will come up with the regulations on how that will be weighed, or how do you envision this whole section being implemented?
I don't mean to circumvent the question, but I got a meeting at 9:30 I've got to attend, so I'll turn it over to...
So this bill is secondary to that?
No.
Not very important to you?
They're both very important. But if I could just briefly hit on that, DOT, I'm sure, will put in a process, you know, to rank and make the selections. There has to be some way of having accountability in the process and some way of dispensing the assets. And no community could receive over $5 million in 1 year. So we're trying to stop a large community from just deciding to build a huge harbor and then suck all the capital out of this. This is to be spread around the state for many years and, again, break the cycle.
Madam Chair, if I could add to that. Kim Carno, staff to Senator Bert Stedman. The list here, the 1 through 5, was actually done through conversations with the Department of Transportation. It was done in conjunction with conversations with the Harbors Association as well as the Department of Transportation to try and put in elements so everybody would know how this program would run. And of course, DOT will adopt their own regulations, but I believe we're all on the same page in terms of what the expectation is and what the end result will look like.
Does that answer your question, Senator Hopp?
Somewhat.
Somewhat? Okay. Further questions to follow. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. Undoubtedly, I will benefit from this legislation and these investments in the future, and I don't think that rises to the level of a conflict of interest, but I really appreciate what's being done here, and our harbors are, they probably deteriorate faster when they're neglected than almost any other public infrastructure, just as storms and tides and the environment makes it very difficult. And we have a number of them where concrete on wharfs is spalling and continues to get worse. And the water transport by boat is a huge asset to a significant part of our population and a huge asset to the commercial movement of goods. And I just appreciate the sponsor bringing this forward.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As we look at the people that are, or the municipalities that are going to be involved with this, I can see why, you know, a larger community might be able to go ahead and take advantage of it. What about the smaller communities like Hollis and Nocatee and Pelican and those places? Are they eligible for this grant program as well?
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, any community is essentially eligible for this program. It's going to depend on whether they had harbor transfer to them, and they're going to, you know, be first in the pecking order on major maintenance. Later down in the pecking order is going to be a new construction project. The goal of this really was to use funding that was generated by the coastal communities, and that's why the raw fish tax and the marine fuel tax are being used, so that the benefit goes back to those communities that are already generating the revenue source. And then that's also why there's caps on the amount per harbor and per community, so that you don't have just a larger community coming in and being able to absorb all the money available, so the smaller communities don't have access to it. We tried to really create as much of a level playing field as possible through the conversations that we had with the harbors and with Department of Transportation on how they plan to interpret it.
My last question, Madam Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Are there any communities outside of Southeast Alaska that are eligible to participate in this program?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, any community that has a harbor would be, or intends to build a harbor, would be eligible under this program.
So Kivalina and Tuxuk Bay would be eligible?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, any community that has a harbor or wishes to construct a harbor would be eligible under this program.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Huffman.
Two other questions, Madam Chairman. Senator Dyson said that movement of goods would benefit, but the way that I see this, it would not affect docks. Is that correct? This is just harbors.
There was, if I could, Madam Chair, that meeting was postponed, and I'll be here for a few minutes, but there was an interest, or we deliberately took out breakwaters, dikes, and jetties. I don't think large, commercial docks, if that's the question, commercial meaning like wharf facilities and things like that would qualify. This is geared for, and the reason those other items were taken out is the sheer cost of them and the potential of getting federal support for them. Dredging is also one that's not in there. So this would be for float systems, electrical, water, parking lots, just like the municipal harbors that you see here in Juneau, and they're in other smaller communities.
And the other question is, there quasi-governmental entities would be eligible? I'm thinking along the lines of the CDQ groups in Western Alaska that are in the process of doing similar things as this, but are see a large need for that. How do you see them? Would they be able to participate in this program to build docks, harbors?
Member, the short answer is yes. The first group on the list of priority is the harbors that have been transferred, and any funds that are left over, or when that fund is funds are not applied for, go to new construction and expansion of other harbors. So the answer to that would be yes. And it would allow the CDQ communities to go forward with a 50% capital match for their harbor.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir. Did I see another hand up? Okay, anything you want to add, Senator Stephan? We also have someone in the audience to testify, John Stone.
No, I'm fine, Madam Chair. Senator Hoffman put the fear of God in me when he asked me what was more important, this bill or the meeting on the third floor. So,
he showed you which was most important. So, no, I was intrigued with on the grant applications. I think that really sets is a pretty high standard. Just before you get into the application, into the business of doing this, and. Number three, municipality is secured and will maintain adequate property loss insurance for the replacement costs of the harbor facility, or has an adequate program of insurance and has a preventive maintenance plan for the harbor facility. Because I have an idea, we have some harbors around that don't have all those things in place, and this would be a major step forward. And the limitation on what you can apply for, what the status is at the beginning. So it, and the number two, the municipality will provide 50% of the total project cost as matching funds for the state grant, and that money received by the municipality from the state will not be used as a matching funds. Okay, John Stone, would you like to come forward and testify? Welcome. If you give your name and who you represent, please, and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators. John Stone, and I am testifying today on behalf of the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators. I am also the current president of that association. The association consists of 27 municipal harbor systems throughout the state, from Ketchikan to Nome. I can provide you with a list. I will not read it here for sake of brevity. The sponsor is correct. We have worked with him and his staff very actively for the past 2 years on this issue, and the association is well aware of what this bill entails, and we're completely supportive of it, and we would urge you to move it along today. We believe it is a good resolution to the dilemma that we face, and we believe that it will, in the long term, put us in a position of being completely self-supportive with respect to not only the operations of the harbor facilities, but also with respect to the capital replacement needs over time. In short, we have the 27 harbor systems that we represent have operated harbor facilities for many years. We established fee programs to provide for that operations. Many of those are enterprise funds under municipal law. The dilemma we have is that the facilities and infrastructure were owned by the state, and none of us established replacement funds because the infrastructure was not ours. That was turned over to us very recently. And along with that, we did receive some money, but that money was far short of what is necessary to replace those facilities. Most of the facilities were at the end of the useful life, beyond economic repair. And so now we have situations where the money that we did obtain with the transfers was such that we could do some replacement, but we have substantially large replacement bills. To help with that, we're in the process of raising rates quite dramatically in places. The harbor system that I manage, we're in the process of raising, doubling our fees and tripling several fees and adding quite a bit of new fees. And with that, we're in the process to develop a revenue bond through the Alaska Bond Bank that will help with replacement, but it does not cover the complete replacement bill. And so the dilemma, of course, is that some of the facilities probably will disappear over time if we can't find another way to come up with financing to help with that. I think all of us are in the same situation. You know, we have very large replacement needs. We're looking at drastic rate increases, and you can only get so much money out of a harbor system before you basically drive all the users away. Certainly over a long period of time, a few decades, you can accommodate a large capital replacement program, but it's extremely difficult to do it within a few years, and most of the facilities that were turned over to us have replacement needs within the next few years. So, you know, I mean, if you do travel to some of the harbors, we would certainly invite you to take a tour, and the harbor masters can show you the state of the infrastructure. The electrical systems are in quite a tremendous amount of disrepair and present serious safety hazards. A lot of the float systems are sinking. Some of them probably will have to be condemned if we can't come up with a way to replace those. So that's sort of where we're at. We do believe that the 50% matching requirement is a good approach. And I would also point out that basically once you receive money for a harbor, then it's taken off the list, as the chair pointed out. So it does get the state out of the program eventually. And I know that's a concern of DOTs. I believe they will get up and state that they are supportive of that approach. We are certainly supportive of that approach. That's what I have, and I'd do my best to answer any questions. Thank you.
Are there questions for Mr. Stone? Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you for being here. What I'd like you to do is reinforce the perspective that I tried to speak to here earlier, that our harbors don't just serve the recreation industry, but they do serve lots of commercial fishermen. They are a big asset to the kind of low intensity supply, you know, to remote sites and fuel groceries, and that vessels there also are a significant part of our search and rescue and other non-recreational uses. Can you help me be credible on that one?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Dyson. Well, in my humble opinion, I believe the harbor systems are probably the best small business creator in the state. And so if you look at a harbor system, you have recreational uses, of course, and recreational uses cover a spectrum all the way from subsistence fishing to recreational sport fishing to sailing. You have basically the entire fishing fleet of the state of Alaska is housed within the municipal harbor system. You have charter activities that are pretty much spread throughout the state now, all the way from charter fishing, sightseeing. I know in just in our community here in Juneau, we have several freight operators that carry freight from through our harbor system to outlying communities. So there's a tremendous amount of economic activity that's generated through the harbors, and we have done some studies. We did a study up in Valdez and a study in Seward to actually look at that impact. I mean, I could get that for you and provide it to you, but it is in a lot of the communities, the harbors are a substantial portion of the gross economic product of those communities.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there any other questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You know, you talk about some of the charges and the fees that are going to be levied on some of the people. Where do your fees start? I mean, if somebody with an outboard motor and a Zodiac is out there, or is there, when do you start charging people for using the harbor?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I think each harbor system has its own fee structure. For instance, my harbor system has 142 different types of fees that we charge to harbor users. And basically anybody that uses one of our assets pays a user fee. The model that we use to establish fees is very similar to what you would use for a utility, where you go through and allocate costs and then try to apportion those costs to the user, and then from that develop a fee that's fair to that user. Being a public harbor system, we have a tendency to have more complicated fee structures than maybe a private facility would, because we're striving for equity among the users. So basically anybody that uses an asset pays a fee that is, you know, appropriate for use of that asset.
So if a person comes up to your facility rowing in his boat, he pays a fee?
If he ties to the dock, yes. Although we, you know, I mean, we'll allow a certain amount of time, but if somebody's there longer than 4 hours in our case, they're paying a mortgage fee.
Last question, Madam Chairman, yes, and maybe this goes to the sponsor. Are private harbors eligible for this program as well?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I do not believe so. It's got to be a harbor that is under a municipality. It's a grant to a municipality for their harbors, public harbors.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Are there other questions? Is there anyone else? Thank you, John Stone.
Thank you, Brenda.
Nice testimony. Thank you.
Kathy Wasserman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Kathy Wasserman. I'm with the Alaska Municipal League. To support Senator Dyson's question, and I'm always glad to do so, Senator, in a lot of the small communities, the harbor is the only way to get into town. So anyone that enters, for instance, the community of Pelican, has to come through the harbor. So that harbor needs to be in good shape. I was still the mayor there when we took over our harbor from the state. Our problem was that the harbor had lacked major maintenance for over 20 years while the state had owned it. We had done what we could to put it together in short order, but nothing major. So when it came time for the state to give us the money based on the value of the harbor wasn't worth very much because it was sinking in most places. So we were able to fix part of it, but there are three or four major fingers that will not be able to be repaired at all. I think this 50-50 match is a very good way to go. I think it gives the communities buy-in on this, and I think most communities do not wish to be supported by the state, but certainly would appreciate the help. And so I would like...
Don't get a kidder.
I have... I've never asked to be completely supported, or to have the communities completely supported by the state, but I think most would certainly appreciate the help. And that's my story. Sticking to it.
Are there questions? Kathy, thank you. Thank you very much for joining us today. Are there other questions of the sponsor or of Tim Carnot today? I don't know. I was kind of thinking about in this year's capital budget, there are any number of harbors who have come forward asking for 100% money to make the changes. And this is a very permissive bill. It does not say the legislature will forward any money into this. It puts into place a plan that can be used. Senator Bundy, would you rather us hold this bill for another day?
I don't need to hold it. I don't support the bill.
And you don't
support
it. Okay.
I'd like to speak to my objection.
Would you like to go right ahead?
Yeah. Admittedly, half fish tax goes to the communities now, but three-quarters of this will come from the general fund. I think it just creates another entitlement. So surely the fish tax that the communities aren't getting to use for other purposes, but would be going to this harbor program, they will be back to us to ask for those replacements. I disagree with Ms. Wasserman that the municipalities wouldn't like to be 100% state supported. The fiscal note, of course, is incomplete, I think. It doesn't indicate what the grants would be. I'm very frustrated in my time here of the states giving municipalities harbors. Not all of them, of course, were irresponsible. Some sat on their hands while they deteriorated, and now they're back to the state asking for more money on what we basically paid for initially and then gave them. And I have no confidence whatsoever that when their $5 million runs out, they won't be back for more money. It's another entitlement. And I'm sorry, if this is essential to a community, they need to live up to the obligation. Many things we do now, we're talking about user fees, and this just another state entitlement. So I am opposed to it.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd beg to differ. The two sources that we're looking at, by improving the facilities, we could potentially, as a state, receive more money through the improvement of the harbors. The marine fuel tax is directly related to the activities, and the business fisheries tax. These docks are utilized by the fishermen, and by them going out and catching more fish and burning more fuel. It is an indirect user fee. So I think that the state will get additional dollars by improving the facilities out there. So they are paying through these, although the revenues currently go into the general fund, they could be enhanced. Those revenues could be enhanced by the implementation of this bill.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Olson.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I always want to go ahead and speak in support of the bill as well. Certainly, having spent many years on the ocean with my dad running barges, and nothing looks better than the Christmas tree lights that you see coming into the harbor, especially when you're coming in from a storm, and realizing that some of these facilities may be in disrepair, realizing you've been just buffeted around trying to keep from sinking and capsizing. I think that we'd be showing severe neglect to not having a place that's safe for the fishing fleet, for those people that are dealing with cargo, for those people that make their living off the marine system. This is so necessary. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Are there other comments? Senator Wilkin, have you fully apprised of this legislation? Okay. Senator Dyson, anything further to say?
No.
Okay. There's no opposition. Senator Wilkin, can I get a...
Madam Chair, move to report Senate Bill 291 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
And I object.
I object. Okay. Senator Bundy objects. Have you made your comment?
Well, yeah, I guess if you want to bring the bill back and just say each harbor can have its own fish tax to take care of its facilities, maybe that's something I'd entertain. But this, as I say, becomes another entitlement, never ending. I think it's, Madam Chair, it's just maybe it's just part of my frustration of the greater Alaska disconnect. There's
greater what?
Alaska disconnect. There's always too much state spending, unless it's in someone's particular special interest. And then the state should provide endless funds, but don't you ever think about taxes, and God help you if you talk about using earnings of the permanent fund. And I think people are going to have to start doing without so that they become more realistic.
Thank you, Senator Bundy. Vote, please.
Senator Dyson?
We're voting. I'm passing it out. Are you a yay or nay?
I'm a yay.
Okay, you said yes. Okay.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Stedman? Senator Bundy?
No.
Senator Wilkin?
Yes.
Senator Green?
Yes. Okay. SB 291 moves from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for your discussion, Senator Bundy.
You wouldn't want to disappoint you by not.
Okay.
Continuing my endless screed. Look.
One thing I like. Welcome, Annette.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Annette Skavinsky, staff to Senator Cowdery. The bill before you, Senate Bill 315, has to do with property that has been left at a pawn shop, unclaimed, past the unredeemed property deadline, and how that property is handled. What it does is restore the ratio that was originally established between pawn loan limits and unredeemed property. It does not change the pawn loan limit. It only changes the language regarding the sale of the property. And the ratio was previously established in 1981, and since then the pawn loan limit has changed, and the ratio was I believe to be an oversight and was actually never brought up to the ratio originally established.
Are there any questions? Okay, give me an example of this. Some of this I'm reading and I'm thinking, I think I know what this means. Can you give me an example of something you've gone into pawn on day one?
Okay, this is kind of the example that I've used. Let's say that I take my wedding ring in. Let's just say that this ring is worth...
at least $10,000.
It doesn't matter. $2,000, we'll say. That I paid $2,000 for this ring. And when I go into the pawn shop, the max they can loan me is $500. So I leave this. They give me $500 cash. I have 60 days to make interest payments or go give them back the $500 and get my ring back. If I don't do that, the pawn shop can then sell my ring. They need to obviously sell it for $500 to at least get back what they've given me. And they can do that because the value is high enough. However, right now, because the ratio wasn't changed in 81, it still says that anything they sell for more than $400, they have to split the profits with me at 50%. So just in order to recoup their $500, they have to sell this for $600. So what this does is it restores the ratio, which was 2-1, pawn loan limit and unredeemed property. So when they change it to 2-1, pawn loan limit being $500, they don't have to split the profits with me at 50% until they sell this for more than $1,000.
Okay. Does everyone understand that? You got it.
But I heard it once before.
Oh, you go good. You're at an advantage. Okay. Are there any other questions, Senator Bundy?
Well, if I might, Madam Chair, as I understand it. A while back, we expanded the amount that was able to be loaned in a pawn situation, but we didn't expand the amount that they could sell the unredeemed item for without having to split maximum out with the consumer or customer. And this just would get those ratios back in order of what they were
some years ago
prior to the change on the loan amount. Am I accurate in that?
Through the chair, exactly precise.
Are there any other questions? Has there been any opposition to this?
No, we have worked with the Attorney General of Consumer Protection, Ed Sniffen, who and Banking and Securities, who, Department of Commerce, who suggested that we put in disclosure to the consumer when they take their property in as to what the effects would be if it is unredeemed. And we did that in the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. So there has not been any opposition. Everybody seems to be fully.
I should have looked at this first before I asked for your example. Thank you. It's very nice. I like the pictures, so that's good. Great. Good. Okay, any more questions about Senate Bill 315? Does anyone want this held over for further hearings? Senator Wilton.
Madam Chair, move to report committee substitute for Senate Bill number 315, version F, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
There being no objection, Senate Bill 315 moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes. And last for today is Senator Dyson's Senate Bill 274.
Move to report.
You kind of like this?
Another simple bill. Well, that's probably a terrible thing to say about somebody's
you
bill.
You what?
It's a terrible thing to say. It always complicates things when you call it a simple bill.
Thank you. It's all right with you all. Present it from here.
Sure.
Yeah. Thank you. This bill has just trying to solve a couple little problems here. We have had previous administrations that were destroying valuable legal firearms, and just because of an anti-firearm disposition. And what we're doing here is making sure that all legal firearms are made available for sale, and that the state gets a reasonable return on them. The Department of Public Safety has spoken in favor of this, as has the Department of Administration, and how we do it. And firearms that are, quote, illegal, many of those are legal if you have a Class 3 firearms dealer's license, and this makes provision for those that are not legal for all of us to own, that the Class 3 dealers can purchase them. And for the very few firearms that are illegal for anybody to own, almost all of those are only illegal because the barrel's been cut off or the serial number on the frame has been defaced. And so what this provides is that that firearm can be disassembled and only the illegal portions of it destroyed and the rest of it made available to the public for use. It also asks that, well, one of the valuable things that the Department of Safety does is they will go to a firearms dealer with their inventory of confiscated firearms, ones that have were used in evidence and so on and so forth, and ask the dealer to give them a trade-in allowance for those firearms and against new equipment that the department is buying. And this allows that to happen, but it also requires that we get an annual report on what they got for those firearms and the trade-in value that they got and so on. Also, this clarifies very, very clearly that an excuse that previous administrations had used for destroying of firearms was that the state did not want to have the liability of selling a firearm that was then misused. And this makes it very clear that the state has no more liability on selling of a firearm than they do on a pickup truck or a dump truck or anything else that they surplus. And so that just clarifies that point. Any questions?
Are there any questions of the sponsor? I thought we took care of this.
I'm sorry?
I thought we took care of this about 7 or 8 years ago. I guess we just did a resolution at that time. Is that what we did?
That's my recollection, ma'am.
Yeah, because I thought we had done this. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Is there anybody opposing this bill?
No, at least no one that I've heard from.
All right. What was your question?
Is anybody opposing this bill? And I think my specific question, more pointedly, is what's the firearms manufacturer's view on a bill like this?
I have not heard from them. The dealers, it was represented to me, and I don't know that it's true, that at the sales of these weapons, because previous to this legislation, this administration was only selling firearms to folks who had a dealer's license, and under this, the general public who are not disqualified from owning firearms because they're felons or whatever are able. And it was represented to me that a collusion of a very few dealers were going together to the state auctions and agreeing amongst themselves of who would buy which lot, and that the state was getting significantly less than the real value of the weapons. I have not confirmed that. Yeah, but this certainly opens it up to more folks will be bidding on them, and hopefully the state will be getting more value for the surplusing of these firearms.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Yes, sir. Is there anyone opposed to moving this out of committee today? Senator Bundy, you want to give us a
moment? I would be happy to move Senate Bill 274 from State, CS for Senate Bill 274 from committee with a positive fiscal note and individual recommendations.
There being no objection, Senate Bill CS for Senate Bill 274 moves from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senate Finance will meet this evening at 5 p.m. to hear public testimony on the capital budget. And I do want the people in the public to know that the capital budget is a working document. And be ready to give us your comments on what is currently before you, but understand that things are still going on, and we'll look forward to continuing work on it. And with that, we adjourn for this meeting. Is that correct? We are adjourned for this morning. We'll see you at 5 p.m.